Welcome to the Vet Podcast by the vet gurus, Brendan and Mark. Get ready for the latest veterinary news, information, and entertainment. Don't forget to visit us at the Vet Gurus website, vetgurus.com. Now, sit back, relax. It's over to the Vet Gurus, Brendan and Mark.
Welcome to Vet Gurus, Brendan with Mark. As always, 336 episode number, Thursday, March the 7th, 2024. How are you, Mark?
I'm great, Brendan. I am great. But I have got to mention quickly in how good I feel. Crikey's, there's a lot of mosquitoes up where I am at the moment. I usually cope pretty well with them, but I'm coated in insect repellent, and I've got one of those little mozzie coils in the mobile sound booth with me. So, yeah, I'm good, but I'm worried about mosquitoes.
Oh, mozzies. They're my bane. I think we spoke about them previously, haven't we, several times. They love me, the mozzies, and there's nothing worse than having a mozzie buzzing around your bedroom at night, Mark, and you turn on the light and you go nuts trying to find it, and you stumble around, fall over and turn the light on and you can't see. And yes. No, not good. Not good, Mark. Stickers, Mark, stickers. For our listeners, subscribers, how about going to Etsy, etsy.com in your country? There's local websites for Etsy, and going over to the Vet Gurus shop and buy a vetgurus.com sticker, Mark. Bubble-free stickers, and I can attest to that. I've had my Vet Gurus turtle sticker on my little Apple MacBook, Mark, for a couple of years now, and it is not bubbly, and it looks fantastic. Wow. And it's cute as, isn't it, our little logo there. So it's a great way to help support the Vet Gurus and promote Vet Gurus. And I have it stuck on the front of my MacBook there, Mark, my little laptop. And when I flip it open, all the world can see vetgurus.com.
Do you have it upside down so it's right way up when you open your...
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. So when people are looking at me with my laptop facing towards me, they'll see it the right way up. Yes, definitely. So great way to help support us, help pay our costs, head over to there. Only, Mark, $4. And I'm just reading through what it says on there. Stick them everywhere, it says. The official Vet Gurus logo on a sticker. Put them on your laptop, car window, or your forehead.
On your forehead.
Yes. Who wrote that? Probably me, I'd say. So there we go. And thank you to all our supporters and subscribers, Mark, and also our
sponsors. Our
sponsors, yes. Now, Mark, I have a review this week.
Excellent. I love reviews.
Off-the-cuff review. I thought we should throw one in. As you can tell, it's not exactly on the agenda list here, Mark. It's a film. As you know, we do like watching a few interesting films, and this one was certainly interesting, Mark. I watched Poor Things. Mark, have you heard about this film?
No, I have not.
Recently released film. It's in cinemas, I think, still here in Australia at the moment, and it's a bit of a take. It stars some very good actors. Willem Dafoe plays a mad scientist, doctor. Emma Stone is the main character in it. And it's a bit of a take on Frankenstein, basically, in the sort of 1900s or so it's supposed to be. It's based on a novel. And a bit of a spoiler here, Mark. I'm going to talk about what the main plot is about. It's a little bit of a spoiler, so if you want to not have the spoiler, then turn off for 2 minutes and or fast forward and come back. So there we go, Mark. I've just left a little time out there for people
You're
to turn
thoughtful.
Off. Well, this is what it's about, Mark. It's about this woman called Bella Baxter, and she commits suicide. She jumps off a bridge, and the mad doctor, Willem Dafoe's character, grabs the body, and because it was in the water, it was cold and still sort of usable, and he does all sorts of reanimation of animals and that. And she was heavily pregnant. So what he did, as you would, Mark, he cracked open her skull, took her brain out, and put the brain of the fetus in her head. So, jeez. And then zaps her, and that's what the whole story is about. It's this juvenile brain in this adult body, and follows her over time as she learns. And so she behaves like a little brat initially in this big human adult body, and fantastic acting. I think Emma Stone's already won several awards as best, and I think she's in the running for the Oscar for the best actor or actress this year as well. And very quirky, very, very quirky film, Mark. Laughed out loud lots of times with it. Rated R, lots of sex in it as well. And just really bizarre. And I think it's one of these films that will polarise people. There'll be a lot of people absolutely hate it and will not like it at all and will give it, you know, 0 out of 10 and just say they do not get it at all. And others, like myself, thought it was a fantastic film. I just loved it, Mark. Really quirky, really out there. Lots of laughs, great acting, and thoroughly enjoyed it, Mark. So it's one I'd recommend you see at stage, Mark. If you're ever on a plane and you can see it, it'd be a good one to watch on a long international flight, for instance.
I saw online, as you mentioned it, I looked it up, and someone's written here in a review that it was it's as if Barbie were actually about weird Barbie.
Yeah, yeah. Her acting's amazing because initially she can hardly walk. She walks a bit like a marionette, a doll, and then she slowly learns to walk normally. And yeah, very, very funny as well, but very dark and.
Right, yeah. Up our alley. I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah, poor things. And I'm giving it, Mark, a very, very solid 9 out of 10.
Wow, that's a big call.
It's a very good film. So I'd be very interested if any of our listeners have watched it and whether they loved it or loathed it, Mark. So there we go.
And Brendan, our news story is about your hometown.
Yes, yes. Now, did you want to crack into it first, and then I'll make a couple of comments.
for sure. So the story is, I'm just bringing it.
Oh, as always, we're beautifully
so organized.
Yes, it's about the Earless Dragon, Mark.
It is.
Let me jump in there. And it's a little, agamid, isn't it? That's found in Victoria's grasslands here near Melbourne, Australia.
Indeed. Yep.
And it was thought to be extinct, and it was spotted in 2023, so last year for the first time in 50 years. And it unfortunately that it's chosen to its natural habitat is these volcanic grasslands, Mark. And as we were chatting off air before we started recording, it's an area that there's big developments going on with the sprawl of Melbourne.
Crikey, I couldn't believe it. This article points out 310,000 homes and 230,000 jobs could be affected because, of course, a critically endangered species. Some researchers liken the discovery of the grasslands, the Earless Dragon, after 50 years to like finding a thylacine on the outskirts of Melbourne. And, of course, it has put a little bit of a pause on that massive development. And it's things like this that,
yeah, it's tricky.
It's a clash, isn't it? It is tricky.
Yes, it's problematic, as they say, Mark. I mean, Melbourne Zoo has started a breeding program and they've hatched out, so far, I think 16 males and 13 females as part of recovery effort.
That's about all they'll need once the grasslands are turned to houses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, they do, and you're right, being cynical like that. They talk about in the article about that you know, encouraging residents to, you know, make their backyards suitable. banning cats, keeping them indoors, encouraging homeowners to build backyards that benefit native animals. Well, that's going to do stuff all for this, Mark, I reckon. So it's tricky. So, you know, they need to, as they mentioned further on, one of the conservation people spokespersons mentions about the thought of making sure we buy up some of the other land that's suitable for these species that are endangered and making sure that they're protected, Mark. Because, yeah, I think still building houses and trying to live in cohabitation with this little lizard is not going to work very well for the lizard, is it?
Not very well at all, I'm afraid, Brendan. I think it's actually an amazing topic, I think, because I've been wondering a little bit lately about because the whole concept of buybacks and, you know, if someone wanted to develop something somewhere, a mine or something like this, then they could protect an equivalent ecological region. You know, they pay a price to have some high value area protected. I think it's a bit like quality time with children. There's no such thing as better, you know, there's habitat. There's not better habitat and worse habitat. And if you destroy this habitat, it's destroyed. You can't trade off another bit of habitat so you can comfortably destroy this bit. It's gone. And the Ilis dragon will be gone with it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think, I don't know, people have to live somewhere. I'm not so idealistic that I don't appreciate that our growing population needs places to stay, but I am cynical enough to think that developers will make a ton of money out of the housing in the grasslands, and they, you know, might not be in everyone else's best interest for that to happen.
Yes.
The developers will win, and the rest of the community and the earless dragon will lose in the process.
Yes, it's promoted as a bit of a happy story, but it's a sad story.
Well, it's good at the moment because there was a time, wasn't there, when literally they wouldn't have stopped. There would have been this discovery and they just would have steamrolled the development through. So your government, the Victorian government's good in that it has allowed things to be halted while, you know, step back and see what's going to happen. But I do worry that that'll just be a little breath and then things will steam ahead with token efforts at saving the poor little lizard.
Yep.
I hate to be so cynical.
With that positive news there, Mark, I think we should go on to our philosophical main topic this week, Mark, and you wanted to chat a little bit about the history of veterinary science and specifically in New South Wales or Australia, but I think we can broaden it to worldwide as well. So,
there's several things I want to say by way of introduction. Yes, you're exactly right. We do have like lots of clinically relevant and very precise technical topics, and I encourage our listeners to go and do a search on the episodes that we have if they have something they're interested in specifically. But every once in a while, we do, Brendan, just wax a little bit philosophical, and this is one of those times. And it's a time that's jumped to my mind because I recently missed a very big celebration in New South Wales Government House where the New South Wales Governor had a large number of high-profile veterinary leaders. One of our friends, in fact, attended the function, the dinner.
Surprise you weren't there, Mark. Were you late?
I was. Did you forget the invite? No, I RSVP'd, but I couldn't get down there in this time of year, but it was to celebrate 100 years of veterinary registration in New South Wales. So I know that our professional organisation, the AVA, celebrated 100 years last year, was it? Or was it one of the most recent years? But yes. Essentially, it's the centenary of our profession in Australia in one form or another. And I thought it would be a good time to look back, you know, to reflect on what we've done as a profession and maybe, like you mentioned, look forward and maybe imagine what veterinary practice, if it exists, will be like in 100 years more.
So I was going to touch on the first thing that I think the veterinary profession has made a huge difference, and that is largely the health of our food-producing animals. That really was probably the main reason beasts of burden and food-producing animals were the main focus of veterinarians 100 years ago. And, yeah, they were really good at their job, and those animals made a huge difference. The fact that there was, as a consequence of the work of veterinarians, there was food security, and these animals, you know, were production animals, were allowed a certain stability to food production that directly benefited people. I think, it's been one of the outstanding achievements of our profession over the last 100 years, Brendan.
And it's been mirrored worldwide, hasn't it, with that food production animal veterinary input mark, with, you know, everything from tuberculosis testing, brucellosis, all those sorts of herd health aspects. Yes. You know, UK, Europe, USA, Australia. Yes.
And I think you're right. Most of these things, while I focus on 100 years here in Australia, the achievements of the profession, like you said, they're worldwide. The things that veterinarians have done here in Australia are fit with the profession worldwide. And the last sort of, I suppose, the second half of that 100 years has been characterized by a great shift to companion animals, pets, and their role as humans have become more isolated in Western culture, as families have become smaller and smaller units, and people have companion animals which have a huger emotional value for them, a greater and greater emotional value. Veterinarians have been powerful advocates for the welfare of those animals, as well as ensuring their health, and as a consequence, that has a direct effect on the mental health of the human population at large. What do you think about that, Brendan?
Yes, well, small animals and all those exotics and other non-food producing animals were a bit of a sideline, weren't they? I think worldwide, I mean, the classics there would be, if I remember reading all the James Herriot books and that, and then when he started doing a little bit of small animals, it was a novelty, wasn't it? Potentially, and there was that one, I think that one orthopedic surgeon or small animal vet that he used to take the dogs and cats to in all of North Yorkshire, wasn't it? And similar sort of process, I think, worldwide in that, the welfare of these smallies is and the focus on them is certainly much more these days. And I just looked up, Mark, it's the 100 years of the Australian Veterinary Association was 2021, Mark.
And it's the other interesting thing about the shift to away from, well, I mean, I shouldn't say away, because veterinarians are still massively involved in the health and welfare of production animals, that it's probably been a little bit of a shift in that they, you know, even more larger health units, animal units, they, you know, they're dealing rather with individual animals or single herds, they're dealing with larger populations in production animals. But I'm equally fascinated by, for obvious personal reasons, the rise in exotic and avian animals as companions for people, and the relationship that people have with animals that are outside the traditional companion animals. And yeah, it's been I looked at it was 2003, I think, that the Unusual Pets and Exotic Vets Special Interest Group started here in Australia, and now they're a significant component of our professional organisation's special interest groups. And, yeah, it's fascinating to watch that change over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yes. Now, here's a bit of trivia for you, Mark, from Wikipedia.
I love your trivia.
You'll like this one. Archaeological evidence in the form of a cow skull showed that people were performing veterinary procedures in the Neolithic period, Mark, 3,400 to 3,000 BC.
That could have been a procedure that I did.
Yes, trepanation. So drilling holes in cow skull, Mark. So there you go. And it's quite an interesting summary on veterinary medicine on Wikipedia, the history of it there, Mark. And then talking about the Egyptians and so on, and then to the establishment of the first veterinary school in Lyon in France, Mark, in 1762.
Well, the other thing I think that here in Australia in particular, but worldwide, again, it's reflected worldwide, the well-rounded education that veterinarians have in science, I think has allowed veterinarians to punch a little bit above their weight in terms of being leaders in science. And so we have people like Ian Clunies Ross, who was the head of the CSIRO. I had his name written down now. I can't remember it. Doherty.
Peter Doherty, yes, the Nobel laureate.
I think per number of veterinarians we have in Australia, we really have led a number of areas of science forward and made disproportionate contributions. So I think there's a characteristic of veterinarians as mavericks and leaders that's been a feature of the profession over the last 100 years.
Yes. Absolutely.
You're a good example of that, Brendan, in my personal opinion.
What, of somebody who drills holes in cow skulls?
No, I meant more the leadership and maverick.
Drilling holes in snake skulls instead, yes. Yeah, now, Mark, we need to jump to part two of this, I think.
We do. Part two is right on. I'm going to need some input here, and I'm completely opening myself up to untold criticism, online trolling, because I wonder what the profession will be doing in 100 years. So I've got a couple of ideas, and I appreciate your input on this too, Brendan. I've got the first thing. I wonder whether we will still keep animals as pets in 100 years. Will veterinarians actually be the same profession that it is now, caring for individual companion animals? Or do you think that might be something that is coming to an end, and veterinarians will have to form a, you know, pivot, as the communicators say, into a new area? So I wonder whether there will be pets. I also wonder if there is, let's just say there is, I don't think that veterinarians will restrict themselves to just animals. I think there will be one health practitioners, people who cross the border between, well, by that time, it'll be the animals, humans, and the aliens. There'll be medical experts required to deal with, you know, all living organisms. And I think veterinarian, that will be the one of the potential pivots that our profession takes.
Yes. It's interesting you mentioned that, Mark, because I was going to jump in and say that, yes, in the future, 100 years from now, then, you know, the real doctors out there treating other species, we're the only registered practitioners for non-humans. So those out in space, Mark, treating aliens, it's veterinarians.
I think they will
be. Not human medico doctors, because of our not just the legislation, but also the wide range of skills in dealing with more than one species, Mark.
I agree with you altogether.
And, so all these science fiction films, Mark, that I love, get it wrong when they have a human
medical officer. They won't be a medical officer on board.
The medical officer will be a veterinarian. Yes,
I think you're right. Yes. I think you're exactly right.
So the other thing, I can see that in the future, Mark.
Yes, a one health practitioner or the chief veterinary officer on the Starship Enterprise. I reckon that's exactly where we'll end up. The other sort of out there thought that I had is that I've been seeing a fair bit of this material on my social media feed about brain organoids. So these are stem cells that have been encouraged in vitro to become primitive brains, and the cells differentiate into a group of they can be managed to differentiate into a group of cells that behave like a brain. And scientists have been using these brain organoids to run things, to put them into devices and allow the devices to play games, for example. I don't know that this is a good thing. I have my concerns. Every dystopian future science fiction story that deals with disaster has to do with some form of artificial intelligence like this becoming sentient first and then conscious and then deciding the God-making humans weren't worth it. But I do wonder who will look after these, organism cross robots. Who's going to be in charge? That's right. Who's going to do the healthcare for the symbiont, whatever half and half ends up being the case? There's going to have to be a healthcare operator to manage the organic part of the organism, and so I just wonder whether veterinarians are more suited to deal with that sort of stuff than maybe human medicos, on the same basic principle that we were talking about before. Would you be happy to work on a
bit of mush in a petri dish? Tricky one. I doubt I'll be around in that 100 years time, Mark. So, yeah. It's a bit like the argument of should we be keeping some of these species as pets, Mark, or let them be free? Not that you can let this little brain be free, this brain organoid, as you call it. Yes, interesting.
So my final, do you have any thoughts about what we'll be doing in 100 years before I?
I still think 100 years. Well, 50 years will still be. Animals and pets, 100 years, maybe might be getting, who knows, may not be present. I still think they probably will be, Mark, so I still think they'll be used for veterinary practitioners in 100 years, whether there's a greater percentage doing other things, Mark, like treating aliens, who knows.
I do think that the veterinary profession is a little bit unique in that a lot of the changes that will happen to other professions, I mean, we'll absorb a lot of those changes in technology and artificial intelligence, and I think telemedicine, as a consequence, will see the rise of that sort of thing as technology makes telecommunications more efficient, and so I think there will be an ongoing role for veterinarians, but I also think that that basic broad problem-solving science-focused education that we have will put us in great stead to, as I said, pivot to look for ways to leverage advocacy for animal health and welfare long into the future. And I agree with you. I think there will still be, I don't know exactly what they will look like, but I think there will still be veterinarians in 100 years from now celebrating the double centenary, going to dinner at the satellite with the governor
orbiting
of the
station.
Earth.
Yes.
But I'd love to hear from our listeners, Brendan. I'd love to hear what they think the veterinary profession will look like in 100 years. It's a long time, and allow your imagination to go wild and let us know what you think our profession will look like in 100 years. And we will have that discussion. Our still conscious minds operating some sort of suspended machine. We'll still be doing the podcast, I reckon, Brendan.
Oh, what number? We'll be up to a fair number by then, I think, yes. And if you want to send some thoughts, vetgurus@gmail.com, Would be good if we're still doing the podcast there in 100 years. Gee, we would have worked out how to live forever almost, wouldn't we, if we're still around in 100 years. That would be...
We'll certainly have our agenda prepared.
And I don't want to be one of those brains in a petri dish, Mark. I'd prefer not to be around if that's what they're doing with me, in 100 years. I think we better get out of here, Mark. And, yeah, I look forward to the next 1, 10, 20, 30 years. But it would be great if we were around in 100 years, Mark. Mr. Outro's here, so we'll get out of here, Mark. Talk to you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Vet Podcast by the Vet Gurus. Don't forget to visit us at the website vetgurus.com, where you can subscribe, view show notes, listen to previous episodes and more. You can contact us via email at vetgurus@gmail.com to ask a question or just say hi. Thanks again, and see you next time.